Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Todd Lebo and Jake Gutierrez on this Thursday, July 9th, 2020, 7:01 in the a.m. Right now, our guest is Buster Olney, our baseball insider from ESPN. Hello, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing okay. And by the way, I got the answer on the blackout thing, which I'm sure you guys have ascertained already, that there are no plans to alter the blackout rules at this point. Right. So, my sense is that they are just going to honor the existing rules and the existing, web of contractual things that they got going on, and that will not be changed even under the current circumstances.
I'm glad that you were able to get that answer, but I just should have assumed what would be the wrong decision to make and what would be the worst thing for fans. And I should have just went with that, Buster.
You've been paying attention to baseball so far this year. Because it does feel like that if there's a bad way to do something, baseball's been doing it that way this year.
That is right. Buster Olney's our guest. All right, Buster, so Rob Manfred has taken a lot of heat. Tony Clark has taken a lot of heat. No one's coming out as the good guy with all of this and everything that's happened with baseball. What should those guys be doing differently?
Yeah, and look, I think we all understand that baseball is completely at the mercy of the forces around them. The spike in numbers in states that are so key to baseball, Florida and Texas and Arizona and California, and there's only so much that they can control. And so it wasn't a surprise last weekend when you had a lot of initial early issues with the testing, where a number of teams, the Nationals, the Cardinals, the Oakland Athletics, the Giants, all had to cancel workouts because they didn't get testing results. And, there was some talk in this game about, what should these general managers be doing in these situations? Should they actually be canceling workouts? I really think, really, really think it would behoove the sport if Rob Manfred, Tony Clark took a cue from what, and I live here in New York, how Governor Cuomo has handled the pandemic here. Every day he's given updates, and he's gone on, he's met with reporters and said, okay, here are the numbers, and here's, what's gone well so far, and here's what's gone poorly so far, and here's what we're going to do to address this. So in other words, the other day, when the Nationals, because they didn't get their test results, canceled their workouts, Mike Rizzo, their general manager, put out a blistering statement. And what I heard is, and the Washington Post reported that Major League Baseball is really upset with that statement, and they came down like a ton of bricks on Rizzo. And I think all of these general managers are like state governors right now. They're just trying to do what they can to keep their players healthy, and it would really help if Rob and Tony got on a conference call every day and explained to reporters, and in other words, getting their voices to the players, okay, yes, the testing results didn't come in soon enough with the Nationals. We agree with Sean Doolittle, one of their relievers. That has to get better. Yes, we have to clean that up. Here's what our plan is to do that moving forward. Here's what our concerns are at the moment. I think everybody gets it, fans, players. This is really fragile, and it's going to be really difficult to pull off. And if you get the voices of the leader of the sport every day telling you how they're trying to make it work, I think that would help everybody's state of mind within the game.
Buster Olney from ESPN is our guest, Major League Baseball expert. And Buster, every day, sometimes twice a day, I'm on a Zoom with Mike Matheny as they, this is how baseball works, the rhythm of baseball. You get to talk to the manager every day. And they're out here on the quote-unquote front lines talking to the media, and they can't really answer questions about, testing because the specifics of it, they're just not supposed to, right? Now, the Royals have had three positive tests, and they can't say who those players are until the players say it's fine, and that's what's happened. Salvador Perez was okay with saying he was positive, so was Ryan O'Hearn and Brad Keller. But, these managers are out here all the time, and they're not getting that, they don't have the information. They're not supposed to say these things. It should come from someone higher up. So I don't think it's fair to them that they're out here, and they're going to get asked questions about this stuff. And Mike Matheny's very nice about it. He's like, guys, I'm going to tell you, I got to tiptoe around these things. I know it's boring, But this just the position I'm in. I can't say things about this. So I think baseball is putting, you know, their players and managers in a bad spot because they are being made available.
100%. And you're exactly right. That's why it's driving me crazy right now when I'm hearing, you know, folks within baseball saying, well, that general manager didn't handle it well, or we don't like the answer that manager gave. Well, you know what? Then grab the steering wheel. Get out there and answer the questions. Imagine if in a Zoom call every day, you know, Rob Manfred and Tony Clark came out, sat, you know, side by side on the call and told reporters, okay, here's what we got yesterday, 27 new positive tests. These are the five players who've told us that we can release their names, Salvador Perez, Brad Keller, et cetera, and laid it out and said, okay, this is, you know, at the moment, you know, we had issues with our testing over the weekend. Here's what we're doing to fix that problem. It would allow the managers, the general managers, to do what they're trained to do, and that is to worry about baseball. And look, baseball teams, on a daily basis, they deal with injuries all the time and players' absences all the time. And the mentality is, okay, next man up, and the guys who are here, the guys we're going to focus on. But because it's been left in their laps to be the, you know, the theoretical filters for this information and have to decide on the fly, we can't talk about that guy, we can't talk about that guy. How much better would it be if Mike Matheny, you know, Dayton Moore were in a position where they could simply say, the commissioner has a conference call at 1 o'clock, he's going to give all that information. You know, we have three players who aren't here, and he will have some details for you later. And just defer it and let them talk about baseball. I think that would help everybody.
So you mentioned this in your answer, but do we know what they're doing to fix the problem with the testing?
Well, they are, you know, and what we got was sort of classic baseball 2020 the other day. We got a statement without a name on it saying that, you know, they're in the process of working through, you know, unforeseen circumstances, which I'm sorry, you just can't say that. Under you know, with baseball having been down for 3 months, and you know, us having a sense with a month to go that it was going to potentially start, you know, July 4th or a little bit later, you can't say, well, we didn't anticipate that. You should have. But they apparently have broadened the sources they have in terms of processing testing. And let's be, you know, there's no question about this. This is not, you know, this situation is not with the coronavirus, it's not their fault. You know, there is no precedent for any of this. And so they're scrambling to try to develop a system which is so much larger than what the NBA, the NHL, other teams have. And each of these team bubbles, you have, what, 80, 90 people times 30. It's enormous. The challenge is enormous. And these, you know, the players, at the end of the day, they're not going back and living like monks in a team hotel that have been, you know, battened down and with disinfectant around the site. They're going home, and they're, you know, with family and friends and people who've been out and about all day, potentially exposed. It's an incredible challenge.
Buster, one of the things that I have heard more than once from Mike Matheny on our Zooms when we've had a chance to talk to him is they've really been preaching, and this is happening everywhere. You know, it's not what you do here in the stadium when you put the mask on to walk from the clubhouse to the interview room or to go out in the field. That's not where you're going to have to be disciplined about this. It's going to be when you get in your car and you go home, right? And if you're going home in the middle of America or if you're going home in California or Texas or wherever there's some more hotspots, it's going to be different. But that's the real chance for people to kind of do the right thing, as it were, have the mask on, be socially distant, you know, try to avoid crowds and going out and doing things. Do you get the sense from people you've talked to that players are taking this as seriously as they should be? And this is whether or not you believe that the virus is going to do whatever it's going to do. The reality is, if there's a bunch of positive tests, you won't get to play. Do you think that players have taken this to heart? Because it seems to me like around here they have. There have been a couple of positive tests, but it seems to me like the message has stuck with the players in the Royals organization. Is it happening like that elsewhere?
I think by and large, yes. And every team is having those conversations with the manager, the general manager, the leaders among the players. Hey, we're all in it together, guys. We got to protect each other. But as people in the game have said to me, we're only as strong as our weakest link, and there are weak links. And I'll give you an example. Last weekend, and I personally, I don't think there's a team that has better leadership. You know, there's some teams as good a leadership, but no team has better leadership than the Cleveland Indians. You know, Terry Francona is the manager. Chris Antonetti, so much experience at the head of baseball ops. Francisco Lindor, a great person, you know, is a leader on that team. And so they had those conversations as they began to get together. Hey, we got to protect each other. And then over the weekend, Franmil Reyes, one of their outfielders, was seen on social media at a party on July 4th. And so then the team, you know, isolated him for a couple days. Part for practical reasons, but there probably was some discipline in there. But the fact is, and I think it's why you're hearing players be tentative in the NBA. Damian Lillard spoke to this. They know that they're knuckleheads, and they know that there are players who are not going to want to live like monks, and they know that they're players who just, in the end, are going to be selfish and are not going to give a flying F what other players are saying. Because baseball's the pool with each of these teams is so much larger, the possibility for that is that much greater. So they're working at it, they're saying the right things, they're trying to make it happen, but I think there's an understanding that, yeah, they're going to be, as one general manager said to me, this thing is like Swiss cheese with the holes in it.
And you retweeted, Buster, an interesting article by Alden Gonzalez this morning that discipline might be the ultimate competitive advantage in Major League Baseball. I think that echoes what you're talking about. The
yep.
teams that are able to not have, and like you said, it's going to be very difficult, but if they have that discipline to follow protocol and to not put themselves at greater risk, that's going to be, it really is going to be a competitive advantage in the shortened season.
I think that is for sure. Those teams that are able to lock down their knuckleheads, so to speak, get all the players pulling in the same direction. The other thing, too, is that you really get the sense, you know, let's face it, the Nationals, because Ryan Zimmerman, opted out and Joe Ross opted out and Wellington Castillo, one of their catchers, opted out. They had the testing issues. They had workouts canceled. For them right now, it's got to be incredibly challenging on a day-to-day basis to not feel like you're being overwhelmed by a sense of negativity. I've had managers tell me that that's part of their conversation every day. Hey, let's not make any excuses. Let's not have complaints. Let's not focus on that stuff. Given the uncertainty going on right now around the game, I think it'd be human nature to feel that way on a daily basis, not knowing what's happening. And so one of the great challenges for each of the teams is going to be, can you pull all the players together in that time they're playing baseball together at the stadium and get their minds away from all the questions that everybody has?
Buster Olney from ESPN is our guest here on the Border Patrol, talking about the return of Major League Baseball, hopefully. Well, they're trying to return, so we fingers are crossed on this. Perspective, I think, is probably the thing that people need to have or players need to have. And sometimes when you're a Major League Baseball player, depending on like where you are in the stratosphere of the game, you kind of lose perspective of what everyone else is going through out there. So it seems to us, if you want to make $500,000, $4 or $5 million for a few months of work or whatever, pretty easy ask to just chill, right? And I think maybe the teams that will do the best with this could be the ones who have a little better perspective, and maybe that's the teams that don't have as many guys who have been around for as long and understand what it's like to struggle and kind of get to where you are maybe a little bit more, and maybe those are the ones that will do better. But if there are enough players who don't get it, and we haven't seen anyone have some sort of outbreak where they can't play, like in the MLS in Dallas, they just are not playing in this tournament. All we've seen so far is some teams suspend workouts and waiting for test results. But do you think maybe this will be a nice lesson for all these Major League Baseball players to get a little dose of reality that a lot of people in the regular world have?
And I do think that most of the players are like that. I remember talking with Steven and Nate at the time when Blake Snell said what he said. You know, that made other players blanch, you know, when he was talking about getting his. And even Blake Snell has come out and said, yeah, I know that didn't come off very well. I think most of the players get that. Along the lines of what you're talking about sort of the practical reality, one thing that's really been interesting in how it's developed is that a lot of the players who have money, the players who dropped out so far, guys have already gotten their big contracts. Like, so they have the flexibility in their decision-making that they've earned by being great players. And so, you know, we saw last week that Ryan Zimmerman, who's made over $100 million, he leaves. Ian Desmond, you know, he's made the big money in his career. David Price, there's some conversation now about Buster Posey. Will he be that person? I can tell you, I know Mike Trout. I spent a lot of time working on an E60 with him. I was around his family. His first child is due in early August. I would not at all be surprised if he were to walk away from the team for a time, because I he doesn't care about money. He really doesn't. He's got the biggest contract in baseball, but he's like Patrick Mahomes. My sense of Patrick Mahomes is he really doesn't care that much on a day-to-day basis about money. And I think that's what we're seeing, where players who have some flexibility are feeling like, you know what, I'm good. I don't need to fight for every nickel. And you do wonder if there's going to be a young up-and-coming team where they got a lot of guys who haven't made a lot of money who might, as we're talking about competitive advantage, have that as they go through this.
Buster Olney is our guest. Buster, the Royals had an inter-squad game last night. I've enjoyed watching. Well, I'm starving for any baseball action. Right, so I liked watching Bobby Witt Jr. at the plate and Brady Singer on the mound, except for when he hit Hunter Dozier with a pitch. But I saw Spencer Torkelson got some action and a pinch hit in their inter-squad game. There's been some talk maybe of him actually playing in games this year, the number one overall pick. Because we're not going to see Asa Lacy. He didn't make the 60-man roster. But do you think we'll see Spencer Torkelson in action this year?
I don't know if he'll specifically play, where they actually promote him. Remember, I think if you were to drop a list of the teams doing the ultimate tankathon right now in baseball, the Orioles would be number one. Like, they are the ultimate tankathons. And so if there's anything that can help them not have great results, I think the decisions might steer that way. You know, they're looking at the big picture on this thing. But I'd say this generally, just talking with folks around baseball, they do look at this year as an opportunity to, with minor leagues having been canceled, if you can have some at-bats or some innings that you can give to a young player to help them develop, you're going to do that, especially these elite prospects. For example, the San Diego Padres, you know, they have a great young arms, Mackenzie Gore, a left-handed pitcher, thought to be, Clayton Kershaw-type talent. He's going to be pushed this year, and they're going to put him in the big leagues and throw him into the deep end of the pool because they're going to have that opportunity. Nate Pearson of the Blue Jays is going to get that opportunity, probably the best pitching prospect in the game. I think you're going to see that strategy used with a lot of teams.
See, that's interesting because when you look at the Central, and that's what we care about because that's the division the Royals compete in, you've got the Indians and the Twins are they're competing. You know, they have a chance. They're both favored to be the top two teams in the division. The White Sox, you know, they've amassed all this young talent and young pitching, and so you think that they're on the cusp, but then you got like the Tigers and the Royals. They weren't expected. So when you've got teams, like, say, in this division, the White Sox and the Detroit Tigers, and even the Royals that have so much young talent that may be right there on the edge of being ready to be called up, but maybe not. So, I mean, what approach do you think most teams are going to take? Because, like you said, you could tank in the 60-game season. I don't think the Royals will, but you could also see if you could make something happen in the 60-game season, and you could end up competing and maybe even hell, who knows, make the playoffs in a season that you weren't supposed to contend. What do you think the approach will be, just maybe in the Central, of the Tigers and the White Sox and the Royals?
Yeah, I think those teams, look, I mean, I know Dane Moore long enough, known Mike Matheny long enough, they're going to try to win. And there is an opportunity there that you don't usually have, because over the course of 162 games, you know, the lack of depth, the lack of experience will likely manifest. This is a unique situation. There's no doubt that, when I'm asked about strength of schedules and which teams do you think have an advantage, you look at the numbers and you say, well, the Indians and the Twins and potentially the White Sox, because the Royals and Tigers on paper are the weakest teams. But here's the thing. In a 60-game season, man, the possibility for wild card stuff to happen is just higher because, you know, a really bad team we see every summer can run off 8 wins in 10 games. Can you imagine, like, the conversation if we go through the first 10 games of the year and let's say the Washington Nationals get off the type of start they did last year. I think they were at one point 12 games under 500. They would have been buried in a 60-game season getting off to that kind of start. On the other hand, what happens if the Royals go out and they roll off 8 wins in their first 10 games? And, in a 60-game season, then all of a sudden they're going to get everybody's attention. And idiots like me are going to be writing about, wow, look at the Royals, and maybe they'll be able to pull this together. And especially in this weird year when you have all these outside circumstances, and as I mentioned, the daily concern about the coronavirus and teams being pulled in different directions, and on a day-to-day basis, players potentially being unavailable because of what they're dealing with. If you told me that a team jumped up and shocked everybody and made the postseason, I don't think that would surprise anybody.
Yeah, the schedule is going to be a big, big deal, too, because it's just not going to be mixed up like it is every nope. year. It's just so unbalanced, and that could be a good thing for teams like the Royals. I guess, Buster, last one from me, what's your heat check right now on your confidence level that baseball will start and finish? Do you think they're going to get the testing kind of ironed out and get the results back in? Do you feel like we're kind of working the right direction right now?
So when we started this, and again, I base this off of my daily conversations, I call around all the different camps and ask people, how you feeling, what are you thinking, what are you seeing? When we started this, I put it at 0% they get through the whole season and 5% that they actually start. Now, based on my conversations yesterday, I'd say 30 to 40% chance they start, still 0% they get through because of all the potential holes, all of the issues. And on top of that, these huge jumps in numbers that we're seeing in coronavirus tests, positive tests, and people being infected. That's something that's completely out of baseball's control. And you would assume at some time it's probably going to manifest itself within baseball.
Buster Olney has been our guest. Buster, my final comment is, I've had a lot of fun the last couple of nights because here in Kansas City they've been replaying the 1980 ALCS between the Royals and the Yankees when the Royals swept the Yankees in 3 games and finally got over the hump after losing to them in the playoffs in 76, 77, and 78. And last night was the George Brett mammoth home run off of Goose Gossage to help seal the deal. But the other night we were laughing because they showed game 2 and it was a 1-run lead and Dan Quisenberry was on the mound with 2 runners on in the 9th inning. And he was able to get Nettles to ground into a double play. And then they showed immediately George Steinbrenner stand up and get as real mad and storm out. He was just sitting in the crowd at Royal Stadium, like in the front row behind the dugout, surrounded by rabid Royals fans. And Todd was laughing. It was so funny to think back to that and how crazy that series was and that rivalry was. And Steinbrenner's just sitting out there in the middle of all the crowd. He gets up with his turtleneck and his blazer and storms up the stairs and Royals fans jumping all around him. Obviously, you'd never seen anything like that now. A guy right out there in the middle of angry or celebrating fans. But George Steinbrenner and the 80 Yankees getting swept by the Royals, that was a wonderful walk down memory lane, Buster Olney.
It I'm sure it was for you. And I covered the Yankees for 4 years. I got to know George, and you know, and would hear the stories about how anxious and angry he would get. You know, when they would lose a couple of games, he would go into his thing when he's talking with his Bob. We're going to be a national embarrassment. We're going to be a national embarrassment. We got to shake this up. You know, if you can't get it done, I'm going to fire you. it absolutely was real. Like I, you know, it's amazing to walk through New Yankee Stadium now, and you'll see like down in the bowels, you'll see like a pile of, let's say, Gatorades that are stacked up to be dispensed during the course of a ball game, and they'll be paper torn and sort of all over the place. And so many of the old security people go, "Oh my God, George would have lost his mind." Like, they were so buttoned down at old Yankee Stadium when George was around because they lived in fear of his volcanic temper. And it affected so much. And so, yeah, and that was George in 1980 was George in his absolute heyday of temperament and anger. You know, by the time I covered him, he learned how to go behind the scenes. And, you know, my favorite story about that is that Gene Michael, then Brian Cashman, now the general manager, when George would call and say, "We're going to trade Bernie Williams and you're going to call around and get all the offers," then the way that they learned to push back was to say, "That's okay, George, I'll do that, and I'll tell the media it was your idea." And then he would back off.
Well, the good thing about the 1980 ALCS is George was so mad that they lost that he had a falling out with Dick Houser, who ended up getting to come to the Royals. And, you know,
103 wins, right, that year, and he got fired after winning 103 games in the regular season, if I have my numbers right.
Yeah, because he wouldn't fire his, like, third base coach for sending someone in that game. I mean, it's just, you know, it was great. And we were so happy that Dick Houser got to come and bring a championship to Kansas City. It was sad that his life ended too quickly. But, you know, thank you, George. We appreciate that.
That's right.
And there are a lot of people through baseball, as much success as the Yankees had under George. And, you know, I always said that his ambition was the reason why the Yankees became what they did and they were reborn. But on a day-to-day basis, he was the greatest threat to the organization.
Yeah. He was all of it.
Hey, Buster, as always, thank you so much for the time. We will talk to you next week, sir.
All right, guys. Thank you.
That's Buster Olney from ESPN.
They've really, George Steinbrenner, I mean, he would just fire people all the time, right?
Right.
And it's amazing. And listen, Mr. K, you know, fired Whitey Herzog after making the playoffs all those years, and then he didn't make it in 1979, finished a few games out, and then he fired him. And so Jim Frey, who had been with the Yankees before too, I mean, it was just like how they did. But George Steinbrenner, I mean, Billy Martin was like a yo-yo. You're in, you're out, you're in, you're out. And Dick Houser had that team 103 games, but they got swept, and he didn't like the way it went, so he wanted to do something. And Dick Houser was a little bit stubborn. He said, "No, we're not firing people. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose." So it's pretty crazy, man. Crazy stuff. Those were fun times. And it, you know, it's funny, like, you go back and you watch, like, old Seinfelds, and they do the thing when George worked for the Yankees, and Larry David played the character of George Steinbrenner, and you heard right. Buster do the voice right there. It's exactly the way it was in the show. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? This. It's crazy, man.
No, I love that the other night in game two, and he was all pissed off. And
those seats, he wasn't even down the front row. That was, like, back in about probably, like, the front row of the upper part. Of the lower level, like, you remember how the screen used to go over where the foul balls were?
Yeah, because they just had a camera right on them, so you didn't really see.
My thought much was it was probably the front row of the upper part of the lower deck. You remember how the pathway would walk all the way around the whole stadium? He was probably in like that front part of the lower deck, of the second part of the lower deck, and he was just so mad.
Especially the, I mean, you know, two on, one out. Think, okay, here we go. Nope.
We need this game. We're going back home. These are three-game series, man. That, you know,
right?
Huge games.
I wish they'd have had that camera on him after Brett's home run.
Oh, he was up in a box somewhere there. Yeah. He might have been out of the stadium before George got to second base as slow as George ran.
Might have been home by the time George
Well, he was probably downstairs waiting for Dick Houser to fire him.
Right. That is Todd Lebo. Thank you to Buster Olney for coming on the show. Back after this on WHB.